Cryptography for Dummies, written by Melusina, read by Andy. Patrick has made Pete approximately 45 mixed CDs. It started as an effort to correct the woeful gaps in Pete's musical education. Seriously, how had Pete never listened to Prince? But it rapidly expanded to compilations for studying, driving, Pete's birthday, every other major holiday, and for no reason at all. The mixes predate Patrick's crush on Pete, but just barely. By the third one, a mix for their first drive home to Chicago, Patrick was already half in love with Pete, and every vaguely romantic song he added to the mix felt like a confession. He was sure that he was exposing himself, that Pete would guess how Patrick felt as soon as he listened to it. But they played it 10 times between Austin and Chicago, and Pete never said a word. After that, it becomes a game Patrick plays with himself. How many hints can he leave? How many songs about crushes and unrequited love can he put on every mix he makes for Pete before Pete finally fucking figures it out? Not that it would make a difference if Pete knew. Pete's straight. As much as he hangs on Patrick and talks about how they're meant to be together, Pete's never indicated that he was actually, seriously, interested in Patrick. As many times as he's gotten drunk and kissed Gabe, or Brendan, or Travi, it never goes further than kissing. Pete only dates girls. Patrick's not enough of a masochist to confess his feelings to Pete when he knows that Pete would never be interested. But part of him wants Pete to figure it out. And if Pete guesses without Patrick saying anything, he can hardly be blamed. It's stupid to think that Pete ought to know, but Pete's Patrick's closest friend. He understands Patrick in a way that no one else does. So why can't he pick up on this? Patrick gets it. He's sending Pete a code that Pete doesn't have the key for. But Patrick doesn't know how much more obvious he could be, how much more prominently he could wear his heart on his sleeve, how many more ways he can say, love me, say that you love me, the first song on the most recent mix he made for Pete. On the other hand, Patrick kind of hopes that Pete doesn't know, because the alternative is that he's just cruel, that all his jokes about his ridiculous, epic crush on Patrick are a deliberate mockery of Patrick, and Patrick doesn't want to believe that of him. But even if Pete's just that oblivious, it still hurts. It's still kind of a rejection, and it makes Patrick question everything he thinks he knows about their friendship. Pete's nothing if not predictable. Each of his relationships tracks the same trajectory, from obsessive crush to blissful coupledom to epic heartbreak, and the aftermath is always the same. Pete swears off women, writes a lot of emo poetry, and insists that he and Patrick are going to be life partners. Their sophomore year, Pete dates Alicia for a month. She's a little weird, but Patrick likes her, and he's sorry when Alicia breaks it off. Pete spends 3 days moping artistically on the couches in the lobby of the music building, and then he gives up and makes Patrick go ice skating. Pete drinks way too much of the Goldschlager Spencer had smuggled in a flask, and swears his undying love to Patrick after telling him that he's the warmest, snuggliest bunny. And if that isn't embarrassing enough, the blade on one of Patrick's skates breaks and he veers off course, knocking Pete down and landing right on top of him. Brendan and Spencer think it's hilarious. On the way back to campus, Pete gets sick. Patrick's scarf is a lost cause, along with Pete's hat. And despite extensive scrubbing, it seems likely that Brendan will have gold flakes in the back seat of his car until he graduates. Patrick hates skating. He hates Goldschlager, and he hates Pete. Okay, Patrick doesn't hate Pete, not even a little bit. But Patrick wishes he hated Pete. A lot. Pete spends a few weeks singing Patrick's praises and attempting to occupy the same space as Patrick at all times. And then Pete asks Julia from his modern poetry class to go see the new Studio Ghibli movie with him. Pete and Julia are inseparable for 4 months, 2 weeks, and 3 days. Patrick hates every moment of it. Then Julia ends things with Pete so she can get back together with her high school boyfriend. Things are bad after that. Really bad. Pete spends weeks locked in their dorm room, refusing to talk to Patrick or anyone else. Eventually, Pete starts going to classes and rehearsals again, but he's subdued and he doesn't date anyone else for the rest of the year. He tells everyone that he's waiting for Patrick to recognize that they're meant to be together, and he starts holding Patrick's hand when they're sitting around watching TV. Patrick keeps telling himself that Pete's only joking, but it gives him a warm feeling every time Pete calls him his soulmate. Pete's straight. Patrick knows that, but he starts to believe just a little bit that there's something special between them, that maybe it could become something more. It's just a tiny flare of hope, but it gets brighter every time Pete assures someone that Patrick is the only one for him now. Then semester ends, and the summer theater season starts, and 3 days into rehearsal, Pete meets Gerard Way's younger brother. Patrick misses Pete, which makes no sense. He shouldn't miss Pete because Pete's not gone. He's literally right there, fucking with his phone, texting Mikey, no doubt, and slurping on a big gulp. Pete's right there, just like he's always been, from the very first day of their freshman year. They still share a room, and Pete still cranks Weezer when Patrick's trying to learn his lines and trashes the bathroom every morning, and comes home drunk and climbs into Patrick's bed. Pete is unavoidably present and accounted for, on the spot, impossible to miss. And yet, there's a hollow ache in Patrick's chest that's a little like being homesick, and a lot like being dumped. Patrick misses Pete so much he can't breathe. It's stupid to be jealous of Pete's time. Pete's not Patrick's boyfriend, and he doesn't owe Patrick anything. Patrick should be happy that Pete found someone else he gets along with so well, that Pete's laughing and playing pranks again. It's not that Patrick wants Pete to be miserable. It's just that now Patrick feels like Pete doesn't really need him. Pete's completely absorbed in Mikey, spending as much time with him as possible and texting with him nonstop when they're not physically together. It makes something bitter and resentful churn in Patrick's stomach every time he sees their heads bent together or hears Pete's phone buzz with a new text notification. It never occurs to Patrick that Pete and Mikey could be anything but friends because Pete is straight, which is why it's such a surprise when Patrick finally figures out that straight or not, Pete's definitely gay for Mikey Way. At the cast party for Rent, Pete and Mikey disappear together. When it's time to go back to campus, Patrick searches Gabe's house and finally finds Pete curled up with Mikey in the papasan chair on the porch. When Patrick says his name, Pete looks up with soft, sleepy eyes and draws, "Hey, Trick." His lips are swollen and red. His t-shirt is inside out, and his hair is sticking out in all directions. Patrick feels like he stepped out of himself, like he's watching himself react. He's seen Pete kiss guys before, but this is something altogether different. Patrick notes every detail with the same masochistic pleasure he would take in poking at a sore tooth with his tongue. Mikey's wearing Pete's hoodie, and when he turns his head, Patrick can see the red splotchy marks on his neck and the bruise peeking out from under the stretch collar of his Joy Division t-shirt. Patrick never really thought he had a chance with Pete. But there's a difference between not having a chance because Pete doesn't like guys and not having a chance because Pete doesn't like Patrick. Patrick wants to shove the chair over and dump Pete and Mikey onto the patio. He wants to scream, to jump up and down and demand that Pete see him, see how Patrick's just fucking waiting for him, how Patrick's been here this whole time. Patrick doesn't know how he could be more obvious without actually coming right out and saying it. And this right here is Exhibit A for why he hasn't, because the only thing more humiliating than taking all of Pete's talk about soulmates seriously would be spilling his guts to Pete and having to hear Pete tell him that it was always just a joke. Pete furrows his brows in drunken confusion. Patrick? He shifts around, failing to get enough leverage to propel himself out of the chair. Mikey's eyes flick back and forth between Pete and Patrick, his expression impossible to read. Patrick doesn't punch Mikey or stomp his feet like a 2-year-old. He keeps his voice steady and even and says, "I'm headed back to campus soon. Are you coming or staying here?" Of course, Pete looks at Mikey, who shrugs. Pete says, "We'll play it by ear. We can get a ride with Gerard later if we miss you." Patrick just nods and stalks off to the darkest corner of the yard, where he punches the fence very hard. All this earns him is a bunch of splinters in the backs of his fingers. From the falling down pergola nearby, Gabe calls, "Everything okay?" "Yeah, sorry," Patrick replies, shaking his aching hand. "Just temporary moment of insanity." "We have vodka in here," Vicky says, and Patrick knows it's a bad idea. But pretty much anything is better than going home and sulking in his dorm room by himself. So he makes his way over to the pergola, where Gabe and Vicky are sprawled on a blanket with a handle of vodka and a bag of Doritos. Patrick hisses with pain when Vicky grabs his hand, and she says, "What did you do to yourself?" "Splinters," he explains sheepishly. Luckily, Vicky and Gabe also have a flashlight. Vicky doesn't ask why Patrick was beating up their fence. She just uses her long nails to pick the splinters out one by one. Gabe helpfully provides a little jelly jar filled with vodka and God only knows what kind of juice. Maybe carrot pineapple? It's kind of foul, but the vodka makes everything dull and fuzzy, which is exactly what Patrick needs right now. Before the splinters are all out, the world has started spinning. When the juice is gone, they do a few more shots of vodka for good measure, and when Patrick tries to stand up, he finds that's not really an option anymore. It's a good thing Gabe's there to hold Patrick up while he pukes in the bushes. Afterwards, Vicky pets Patrick's hair and tells him he's the most pathetic person she's ever met. It's oddly comforting. Brendan is attempting to eat an ice cream cone and text at the same time, and getting butter pecan all over his phone. "How's Spencer?" Patrick asks, through a mouthful of Mexican vanilla. "Far away," Brendan says with an exaggerated pout. Patrick nods sympathetically. Brendan's crush on Spencer is so obvious it makes Patrick look positively stealthy. In fact, the only thing more obvious than Brendan's crush on Spencer is Spencer's crush on Brendan, which is why it's totally inexplicable that they haven't gotten together yet. "80s night at Elysium," Brendan says. "You gonna get your prints on?" At Patrick's face, Brendan wheedles. "Pete's coming." "Yeah, and Mikey, right?" Brendan's eyes go wide at Patrick's tone. "Yeah, is that a problem?" No, Patrick says, trying for damage control and probably failing miserably. "Just, you know, they're sort of joined at the hip this summer." "Mikey seems cool," Brendan says, popping the last of his ice cream cone in his mouth. "Totally," Patrick says, as sincerely as possible. "Mikey is cool. That's part of what sucks. He seems like a great guy, and under other circumstances, Patrick would love to hang out with him. It's just that right now, he kind of wishes Mikey would fall off the face of the earth. Patrick knows it's not fair. It's not Mikey's fault. It's not even Pete's fault. This one is all on Patrick." As abruptly as things began with Pete and Mikey, they end. There doesn't seem to have been a fight, but Pete's phone stops buzzing every 30 seconds, and Mikey seems to have disappeared. With the summer stock season over, they're all just killing times until classes start up again. But Mikey doesn't come to the parties at Gabe's or hang out in Pete and Patrick's dorm room anymore. It's not as bad as the breakup with Julia, but Pete's low. He stays in bed all day and sits up all night watching Gilligan's Island and Twilight Zone reruns in the common room. He wears the same pair of ratty jeans and a beat-up black hoodie with a hood up, despite the summer heat. And Patrick's pretty sure Pete's living on dry frosted flakes and the lattes Patrick brings him from Starbucks. Patrick thinks maybe he's a horrible person, because he's actually less miserable than he's been all summer. He knows how to do this part. He brings Pete coffee. He makes Pete a mix of breakup songs. It's difficult to find ones Patrick hasn't used on previous breakup mixes, but Patrick likes a challenge. He sits up with Pete and watches bad television and lets Pete rest his head in Patrick's lap and makes noncommittal noises when Pete complains about what an asshole Mikey is. After a week of moping, Patrick makes Pete take a shower and put on some clean clothes and takes him to Lovejoy's. Pete gets spectacularly drunk, and at the end of the night, he ruffles Patrick's hair and gives him a smacking kiss on the forehead. The next morning, Pete wakes up far too early for someone who drank that much beer and insists that they go to Barton Springs to sweat off their hangovers. Pete lounges shirtless on the grass and scribbles in his notebook while Patrick listens to the Les Miserables soundtrack and thinks about his audition piece. The pool is crowded, but in the absence of anyone they know, it feels intimate, like Pete and Patrick are the only ones who are real. Patrick is more relaxed than he's been all summer. A week later, Patrick finds a crumpled piece of paper on the bathroom floor. In Pete's barely legible scrawl, it says, 1. Kisses in the rain. 2. White denim jackets. 3. Confessions by dashboard lights. 4. Swimming pools. 5. Sleepovers. 6. The taste of sunscreen on sweaty skin. 7. The way the waist of pants feel better at the ankles. 8. I forget what 8 is for. 9. Fuck Mikey Way anyway. Probably it's a good sign that Pete's writing about it. Patrick crumples it up and throws it in the trash anyway. Pete's relatively good mood lasts until everyone gets back from summer vacation and he runs into Mikey at the music department mixer. Patrick watches the whole confrontation through the long glass windows that look out onto the quad. Pete rants and waves his arms, clearly getting more and more agitated. Mikey's shut down, impossible to read, but clearly not giving Pete the explanation he so desperately wants. Finally, Pete stomps off in a huff, leaving Mikey standing in the quad by himself. Patrick drags Pete back to their room before he can say or do anything that will get himself in more trouble. Pete's impulse for grand gestures is never more apparent than when he's in the throes of a breakup. God only knows what he might do. The sound of Pete typing on his laptop keeps Patrick awake most of the night, but the next morning Pete's in fine spirits. He brings Patrick donuts from the cafeteria, and that night Pete snuggles up with Patrick in Patrick's bed and begs Patrick to sing him to sleep. This is the least favorite phase of Pete's breakups. It's so easy to believe it's real, that Pete really does want to be with Patrick, that all his declarations of love are sincere. It's even more tempting to believe Pete now that Patrick knows that Pete could, sometimes, be into guys. But Patrick's learned his lesson. Pete will be on to the next person soon enough, and the more Patrick falls for Pete's shtick, the worse he'll feel when it turns out it was just a joke. So Pete's not as straight as Patrick believed. That doesn't change anything. He still doesn't really want Patrick. The thing is, Pete does a very convincing impression of someone who wants Patrick. They've taken over the common room to watch So You Think You Can Dance. Brendan and Spencer are crammed onto one couch with Ryland and Suarez. Vicky and Nate are sharing the armchair, and Pete's stretched out on the other couch with his head in Patrick's lap. Gabe's pouting because Pete stubbornly refuses to make room for him on the couch. "You don't understand," he insists. Patrick and I have been apart for hours. We need to reconnect. So move over and reconnect on that half of the couch, Gabe grumbles. Pete waggles his eyebrows. We need the whole couch for what I have in mind. Patrick blushes and smacks Pete on the hip, but Pete holds his ground until Gabe just sits on the floor, leaned up against Vicky's legs. Having resolved the seating to his satisfaction, Pete stretches and rubs his face on Patrick's belly until his t-shirt rides up. You have the best tummy, he says happily. Patrick attempts to yank his shirt down. It doesn't really work because Pete's head is in the way. Stop it, Patrick snaps, self-conscious and turned on, and self-conscious because he's turned on. I love it, Pete croons, his breath tickling Patrick's bare stomach. Patrick says, give it a rest, Wentz, and pushes Pete's shoulder hard enough that he has to grab the side of the couch to stay on it. Pete says, dude, chill, in a wounded tone that makes Patrick want to hit him again. Unfortunately, all the evidence suggests that that will just wind Pete up more. Patrick settles for saying, just watch the show, Pete. Pete makes a grumpy sound and resituates himself, squirming around until Patrick hisses, be still, terrified that he's going to embarrass himself if Pete keeps it up. At the next commercial break, Gabe asks, what's the latest with you guys? Pete replies, Patrick and I are getting married. I've played the field and now I'm ready to settle down with my one true love. Gabe smirks. Again? Call it a relapse, Pete says. Gabe and Pete both think that's hilarious. Patrick grits his teeth and tries to ignore them. Pete says, we're going to have a guerrilla wedding. At that place, by the thing where we went that time. He elbows Patrick's leg enthusiastically. You know, what's that place? Laguna Gloria? Patrick guesses. Right! Pete beams up at Patrick like he's performed a magic trick. See? Patrick can read my mind. We have, what's it called? Cryptographia? Cryptophasia? Patrick suggests. Right, that! Our own private language. Patrick understands the inner workings of my soul. The flare of anger and indignation takes Patrick by surprise. This time he does shove Pete out of his lap, saying, if only you understood a single goddamn thing about mine, and stalks back to their room. He's barely in the room before Pete's through the door grabbing his arm and asking, what the fuck? Give me a little space, okay? I can't do this right now. Pete looks equal parts concerned and pissed off. I was just kidding, he says uncertainly. Patrick climbs into his bed and faces the wall. Go away, Pete! Predictably, Pete climbs into the bed with Patrick. Seriously, man, it was just a joke. Don't get your panties in a wad. The last of Patrick's control breaks, and he flips over and snarls. I got that part. Don't worry. It's all a big joke. Ha ha ha. Everybody's laughing. Just tell me one thing, will you? What is the joke here, Pete? What exactly is so funny about all this? Is it how ridiculous it is that anyone would think you could actually be in love with me since I'm so hideous and unlovable? What a laugh that anyone would want me, right? Dude, no. Pete's stricken tone isn't enough to diffuse Patrick's anger. Then you tell me, Pete, what's the big fucking joke? It's not about you, Pete hedges. Jesus, Patrick, you're fucking perfect. How do you not know that? You're the smartest, most talented person I know, and... Pete stops abruptly, a mulish look on his face. Patrick wants to shake Pete until whatever he was going to say falls out. But he also doesn't want to let Pete off the hook, so he asks, then what is it? Pete looks down, suddenly fascinated by Patrick's blue plaid comforter. Finally, he says, so quietly that Patrick has to strain to hear him, it's a joke because it's not a joke. What does that even mean? Patrick asks. Pete fidgets and grimaces. Like a double bluff. At Patrick's blank look, Pete explodes, all of his discomfort and coiled tension erupting into motion. His arms spread wide, and he demands, "What did you think this was? The world's longest running game of gay chicken?" Patrick latches on to the only bit of this that makes any sense. "Actually, yes?" "For fuck's sake," Pete swears. "I'm going to enroll you in a witness protection program for the witless." He tugs on his hair and sighs. "Look, I'm sorry. I know it's kind of creepy to hang on you and everything when you don't." "Wait, stop." Belatedly, Patrick is beginning to put the pieces together. He's certain that if Pete would fucking stop talking for 2 goddamn seconds, Patrick could figure it out. Pete's still talking. Pete's voice cuts off in a garbled noise when Patrick places his hand over Pete's mouth. "Shut up," Patrick says fondly. Pete watches Patrick warily while Patrick processes, all the while keeping his fingers firmly pressed against Pete's lips. It's possible that something terrifyingly, awesomely wonderful is happening, but Patrick's almost afraid to hope. "You weren't joking," he clarifies. Pete shakes his head. "I wasn't joking either," Patrick says. It feels a little bit like stepping off a cliff, and the bottom of his stomach drops out as he continues. "I mean, I wasn't joking. But if I had been joking, it wouldn't have been a joke." Maybe he and Pete are soulmates, because Pete seems to follow that convoluted logic just fine. Patrick can feel Pete's mouth twist into a broad grin under his fingers. He kind of gets lost in thinking about kissing Pete's grin, and then he realizes that Pete hasn't responded. "Do you understand what I'm saying?" he asks frantically, because he needs to know that he and Pete are really on the same wavelength. "Say something," Patrick demands. Then he realizes that, of course, Pete can't say anything, because Patrick still got his hand over Pete's mouth. Sorry, Patrick says, pulling his hand away. Pete's smile is blinding. "I think we understand each other perfectly." The end.